Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 85. Going to wrap up our outfield review, part two, ADPs 31 through 60 from the 2023 season. And, you know, probably talk about some other stuff. I'll try not to mention a certain position, I know, so we'll avoid that at all costs. But it's going to be fun to wrap up the outfield, do pitching next week. You guys enjoy the holiday weekend here, so just one episode this week. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Doing great. It's PDF Eve for the baseball forecaster, which is always exciting. Like the work is done. I think Ray just has to like press a button, and anyone who has a recurring subscription to the forecaster gets the PDF tomorrow. So I think, yeah, he sent it out to HQers earlier this week.
Yeah.
And so you're probably already starting to look at it, but it's out and it's beautiful. I can attest.
He did tweet out 6 hours ago, prepping the distribution list for BF24 e-release tomorrow. It's PDF Eve.
Yep. So it should be out sometime, probably by the time you're listening to this podcast on Wednesday. So good to get that out. And then, yeah, just, I don't know, we're going to chill for Thanksgiving. So like you said, no Thursday show. I'll probably be asleep by 8:30 Thanksgiving night. We'll be back at you next Tuesday for starting pitchers as we crawl to the end of our review period.
Yep. I'm looking forward to the PDF distribution, because it's always fun to see all the tweets where people show their email that comes out. So whoever's in charge of the baseball HQ accounts really busy on Twitter on Wednesday having to retweet stuff. So that's always fun. I'm personally a hard copy guy. I like to have it in my hands. So I'll definitely read some stuff and have some fun with it, but I'm a hard copy guy.
Couldn't tell with your handwritten notepad and your hard copy book.
Yep, that's
me. 2023, Bubba. Yep. It is 2023.
Yeah, but I'm old. We've established that on this show, so it's okay. We can't progress me everywhere. I enjoy analytics. Let's just have fun with that, okay? And see where that goes. But yeah, we're gonna wrap up outfield. We kind of joked before the show that outfield's ugly.
Yeah.
The deeper you get into this, it's like everyone pictures this outfield being this, you know, deep pool, because there's three per team in the MLB. You need five in the NFBC, but it's just like it dries up quick.
So. And like, I think the theme that we talked about last week was this is the place to get your five category well-rounded hitters. And like, that was true for ADP 1 through 30, but like, this is low key pretty bad. 30 through 60, and it's probably why, at least looking forward to like 2024, outfield like is, I think, going to be pretty shallow, just because the names of folks that we are going to talk about tonight is it's pretty ugly. I did forget to pull up the picture, so that's why I'm struggling.
I heard you just put it from your phone to your computer there. So that's good. But yeah, Ben Tidd, you know, good friend of the show, he commented on the tweet and said, hope you already had your steals before you get to this point of the ADP. I guess it reminds me, like when I look at this, because when I do my rankings and stuff, I always remember an outfield, you get to a certain point and it's just like, kind of rank who you like, not maybe who much, like, because they're all, you're kind of going for certain categories to fill out your team is what it comes down to at a certain point. You're not looking for studs to carry your team per se. You're looking to find a diamond in the rough, like Bellinger, who we'll get it to. He was kind of the last diamond in the rough in this area. And otherwise it's like, you can make cases for guys, but it gets ugly quick. So,
Like there was, so out of the 30 through 60, you noticed this before the show, Bubba, but out of ADP 30 through 60, only two guys finished in the top 20. Nick Castellanos, who was the 32nd outfielder overall, ADP of 128, finished 13th. And then obviously Bellinger was the 41st outfielder. Nobody after Bellinger, at least through 60. There, Lane Thomas, I think, finished 10th. We'll get to him in a little bit. But like, there were very few breakouts. And as Ben commented before the show on Twitter, there's a lot of red in the stolen base column. As we pull up the bloom board on the live stream / YouTube, there is a lot of red. There's one super green stolen base, and that's Esteri Ruiz, we'll talk about. But stolen bases to me really fell off in outfield in this 30-60 group. Like there's a couple 20 stolen base guys, but there's a lot of zeros, a lot of ones in this group. Not much power either.
That's what I was gonna say. That's what I was almost more surprised about, is especially on, like, you know, 46 through 60, you can almost even say 42 through 60 after Bellinger. It's mainly like 15 homer guys, a couple that go a little above that, but for the most part 15 or less, give or take. And that's why I start saying, you kind of, when you rank guys, rank who you like, because they're all, a lot of these stat lines are very similar throughout the profiles, and you get a lot of the same players, and you could see some young guys making a boost potentially, or different things, which we'll talk about, of course. But as a whole, it's like 260, 15, 6. Like, that's kind of what you're looking at on average, give or take. And that ain't going to cut it if you didn't draft appropriately earlier. And so that's why I'm really looking forward to recapping starting pitching next week, because we've, every position so far, it's like the top, you know, five, top 10, something like that, are elite. And then we all see, like, these drop-offs start to come in. Outfield is almost even worse, because you need five outfielders. You don't just need one position. So you need five outfielders. And if we're talking, you need to get them in the top 30 ADP, like, that ain't good. That ain't good at all. If you're trying to fill out the rest of your roster, and maybe you want to take a pitcher or two early, that makes things murky real quick.
I know we joked a lot about a lot of my team builds when we were doing live drafts and whatever last draft season, where I'd have like four or five outfielders in the first 9-10 rounds. I don't know if that was, I just lucked into that by design, but like that definitely worked out for me to kind of avoid a lot of these guys. But Bellinger was one who was on a lot of
that was your boy. So you got him. He was on your teams. And it could also be like you use different, you know, projections and models and what you have going on while you're drafting. And they might see that in those models going, hey, this is what the pool looks like. So when you're drafting, that's probably why they were pushed up the your rankings at the time to draft. And that would make sense.
It was more just dumb luck. I'm not that smart, man. But thank you. Okay.
There you go, people. Try to give him a pat on the back. Won't even take it.
Rejected. Yep. Matumboed. Yep.
You matumboed me right there. I got the wagon, everything. Well, we'll take some L's on this show too, so we'll have some fun with that. But let's get into the first one on the show. And this is one that I remember even last year, we talked about him quite a bit for the, like, I think I was higher than most on Stephen Kwan. Other people told me I was crazy. I think we were a little bit both right on that one, I'll be honest with. He finished as the 38th outfielder off the board with an ADP of 125. 268 average, 5 homers, 21 steals, though. So that was nice. The average maybe could have been better. He did score 93 runs, though. That was a plus as well. So kind of the things I liked about Stephen Kwan, I did think he'd have more power than 5 home runs. But this is, like, if you look at his stat line from the year before, this is who he is. And that's kind of scary looking at potentially 2024.
I think he got a little bit screwed over in the batting average department. A 30-point drop in batting average for Kwan, 298 to 268 last year. Like that was surprising to me. But just looking at, like, the underlying, like, the BABIP was around 330 in 2022. That dropped to league average, which is like 300 in 2023. And Kwan is like a super line drive hitter, and he can run. And that combination of line drives and speed, like, I would think Stephen Kwan, like, I would think 268 is kind of a low point for him. And for a guy of his caliber, like, for his skill set, if you raise that batting average up 20 points, the HQ expected batting average for Kwan last year was at 282. So that's kind of right in line. That 21 stolen base total maybe goes to 25, 26. Those 93 runs go to maybe 100. And you get even more value there. So, like, I don't know. Kwan was fine. It's just you knew you weren't getting many homers and you needed to build around that. But going 31st overall, finishing 38th, like, yeah, you want more, but it wasn't a disaster.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just that BABIP drop, get on base, and you mentioned the uptick in the stolen bases that could have gotten to 100 runs also along the way.
Yep.
I think that was one of my standalone points. Is I remember I had Ryan Roof on the Guardians preview, and he was trying to mention how Kwan should benefit from the shift being gone, the way he slaps the ball around the line drives you're talking about, and kind of finding the holes a little better that way. And that would allow for runs scored and everything. So, yeah, that could be a boost. You get, you know, 5 or 6 more steals, five to 10 more runs scored, get the batting average up. It's nice helping you in three categories. At this point, like we said, as we go through these names, that actually stands out to be pretty nice at this point. Yeah. in the
compared to like a lot of the dudes we're going to talk about. Yeah. This wasn't too bad. And like he had the key thing with Kwan, at least looking forward to next year, is make sure he's in leadoff. He's a compiler, 718 plate appearances. He does like need that to get some of those counting stats up.
For sure. All right. One of the players that finished in the top 20, actually finished in the top 13 that we talked about earlier, Nick Castellanos. He had an ADP of 128, finished 13th in the outfield. And it was a bounce back year. Hit 272, 29 homers, 11 stolen bases, drove in 106 runs. He was a guy that struggled in his first year in Philly. He was a popular, like, hey, he should bounce back guy. The ADP might not have reflected what some might have thought he should have gone at, but what it ended up being 128 was pretty fair for all things considered. He looked like the Casty of old, I guess, kind of, sort of, maybe. And then he had a big postseason to top it off. So a nice season for Castellanos.
It is, and I mean, I won't talk too much about Castellanos, like, in particular. This is just one of my, like, I don't know, my picks to nit is we always just focus on when we're doing player evaluations in draft season. So starting up now, we focus so much on the previous year. Nick Castellanos, like, yes, 2022 was a down year on the surface. It was also a down year, like, from the skills as well. So, like, Castellanos had a 7% barrel rate in 2022. That's not very good. But the years before that, 10%, 10%, 16% in 2020, 10%. Skills can fluctuate just like results can. And I think Nick Castellanos is kind of like the poster boy for somebody who has a proven track record who just had a down year. I mean, sometimes that happens. Like a strikeout rate goes up or a barrel rate goes down. But if you focus too much on just last season and you don't focus on the track record for some of these guys, I think that can be a blind spot. In Castellanos' case, I mean, that's a perfect example of what happened. He basically just snapped back to the guy he was pre-2022 last year. And I think, you know, it was just a down year in 2022. So,
yep, I'm with you on that one. The next one, I don't have a whole lot to say because anybody that's listening to any sort of content I have provided in the past knows my thoughts on one Christopher Bryant. And this is where I take the big W on this one. It's not challenging. It was simple. I'm just going to take pride in this one because 233, 10 homers, zero stolen bases, finishes the 148th outfielder in his first year in Coors Field. And I will fade him for the rest of my time.
Pain. I'm taking the L. You did the W. I'll do the L. It was the Tout Wars draft where I think it was like the eighth and ninth round turn. I took Chris Bryant and Giancarlo Stanton.
Wow.
And I finished second in Tout. And that's somehow amazing that I did
that. Yeah, it is very amazing. That's the power of having IL spots.
Yeah, I did have unlimited IL in Tout, but still to go Bryant and Giancarlo. Just terrible. I don't know, Bryant, like, yes, it's injury related, but like, I mean, does it go away? I mean, a lot of the stuff that he has is stuff that lingers.
It lingered all last year. He'd come back for like a couple of weeks and have to go back to the IL. It was like one back injuries, wrist injuries. It was always something.
Yeah. So. Hand, heel, plantar fasciitis. That's like the ultimate injury that never goes away. So just hard to, hard to predict what he's going to do next year.
Yep, not good, Bob. What is good, and this is where, like, you know, Kwan, we talked about, kind of underachieved, could take the next step. Seiya Suzuki's a fun one to look at going forward. He was the 34th outfielder off the board, finished 32nd at the position, hitting .285 with 20 homers, 6 stolen bases. You know, started the year late because he was coming off an injury, kind of battled it early in the year, and it really showcases because if you look at his first half, second half splits, first half hit .259, second half .313. He hit 13 of his 20 home runs in the second half of the season, scored 47 runs, stole 5 of his 6 bags. Like, the second half was a phenomenal season part of the season for Seiya Suzuki. And, you know, the optimism is you have to think that's kind of the guy he is, which would make sense. So we kind of take a grain of salt with the overall production, I think, from Seiya last season.
He's going to be a polarizing dude. Like, just from some chatter and things that I've seen on Twitter, like, there's going to be a lot of Seiya Suzuki stands and a lot of guys that don't like him. I had Suzuki I had his box in the forecaster, and I'm glad you brought up the first and second half splits, Bubba, because he was hurt in first half. He missed the first 2 weeks of the season with an oblique, and he had some like neck issues in June. After August, like, this dude was awesome. I think this is someone who, like, who could repeat in batting average, hit 285 again, but go 25 homers, 10 steals. I think Suzuki, if he's healthy and he finished the season healthy, which is always important for me, in a pretty good lineup, I think what we saw from Suzuki, from a healthy Suzuki in the second half, no, he's not going to hit 319 or whatever he hit in the second half, but I think that type of pace expectation is reasonable going forward, just with a few less hits.
Yeah, he had a great hit tool overseas, and we were kind of expecting that to come over. That was year two, and you know, Ha-Sung Kim actually came out in an interview and said he finally got comfortable with the the culture in America and everything. That's why he started playing better last year. It's common sense stuff. I think some people, myself, others, maybe don't take it into deep enough account with some of these players, that there's a reason why a lot of like Japanese players go to the same teams, it seems like, out the gate, because there's a culture there. Like Kim's already trying to bring in the other guy from the KBO that's coming over right now. I forget, like
Yamamoto.
No, the center fielder.
Oh, the outfielder.
So I think he's trying to recruit him. He said it in the interview, like, I'd love to bring him here, take him under my wing. I could show him where to eat. I could like totally take care of him, and he doesn't have to worry about any of that stuff. And there's a lot to be said about that. So, and that's why they're telling Yamamoto going to pitch with Senga with the Mets would make a ton of sense, like stuff like that, where you kind of already get those barriers out of the way. But so that's just a little side piece there. Anthony Santander is a fun one. He finished 20th. That was my bad. Misread this one earlier. I was wondering, because I remember how good he played last year. 35th off the board, finished 20th in the outfield, hit 257, 28 homers, 5 stolen bases. He even drove in 95 runs. He hit 23 of his 28 home runs against righties. So he's a switch hitter, so he played all the time, but he loved hitting righties a lot more. Makes sense in that ballpark also. But the one thing I want to mention is he's the one that the steals aren't there, obviously, but he surpassed Cedric Mullins as the main outfielder in that situation. And he's pretty much locked into that middle of that order. And he had a big, especially, I thought the second half was better. His first half was better, but he was clutch down the stretch too.
Yeah, he was. The big thing for Santander was like, he'd always been kind of a batting average suck, but you get 257, like that's not bad. And then he almost volumed his way pretty much to this 95 RBI and 81 runs. Like that matters a lot on an Orioles team that I think should probably be even better in 2024. So I don't know if Santander hits 260 again. I still feel like this is more like a 240 guy. The strikeout rate went up quite a bit, and he just hits so many damn fly balls, 50% fly ball rate. And Bubba, you mentioned the ballpark, like as a switch hitter, he is hitting lefty more often than righty, but still that could definitely hurt and continue to hurt him. I think he has like 40 home run power in a better park, but I think 30, maybe Santander's cap. I believe he is first base. No, he's not first base. He was in season first base, but yeah, only played 12 games there. So
yeah, because that's when Ryan O'Hearn showed up to take that away from him. So
Ryan O'Hearn's lasting legacy for fantasy baseball.
And I'm looking at ADP for 2024. He's the 31st outfielder off the board. He's going 15 picks after Cedric Mullins. So
he was 35th. All right. So this is my, remember when I totally botched my Christian Yelich ADP thing last week? So Santander was drafted 35th coming into last season, finished 20th. And now he's only going 31st. So we only raised like 4 spots.
Yep.
So maybe they're getting the Yelich treatment. I'm not saying, I mean, it's a different player, not going to get the steals, but it's just someone that similar to Yelich last year. It sounds like the market is not rewarding Santander for what he did last year.
No, they're not believing that at the batting average bump. The 36th outfielder off the board, finished 47th, is Andrew Vaughn, 258 average, 21 homers, 0 stolen bases. He has 1 stolen base in his 3 seasons in the bigs. Power's gone up. He's also played more games each year, so it's kind of the same. I think we kind of talked about him briefly at first base, possibly, but he's outfield only now. And this might be who he is.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we talked about at first base with with Vaughn, it's just like you expect someone who was the third overall pick to take a step, and he still might. Like, this will only be Vaughn's age 26 season coming up, but like everything I see that we've seen in the majors from Vaughn just looks like a, I don't know, not a bad player, but I don't really see a next level. Like, there isn't anything that sticks out in terms of like a plus batting average or honestly even plus power at this point. You're just kind of getting average at both. And again, that's not bad, especially when we talk about some of these names further down. But yeah.
Yeah, it was rough. What else was rough was the next outfielder off the board. And that is one Hunter Renfroe, 37th outfielder, finished 79th, 233, 20 homers, zero steals. And you just look at the quality of contact metrics. You look at a lot of factors. It all dropped. First thing that comes to my mind, was he playing hurt a lot this season? Because he even went to Cincinnati, where we all got excited, and he ended up getting released, I believe. Or he got cut in Cincinnati. Like, it didn't even work out there. It was just a bad season for Hunter Renfroe. And I don't know if it's going to get any better, because he's only going to be 32 this year, so he's not that old.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, I don't know. He's getting up there for someone that doesn't run, doesn't hit for average, like has some power. I just wonder if he becomes just like a platoon bat. One of the pieces of research that's coming out in the Forecaster, and Renfroe is actually part of this essay, is how lefty righty splits can deteriorate pretty quickly when you get into your even low 30s for guys who don't run. And Renfroe, I worry that he's a short side platoon bat. Like, he somehow got 548 plate appearances last year. I'm taking the firm under on that next year. And I would think the market is too. Like, there's not much here outside of some power.
ADP 415.
Yeah. And I don't, hey, I mean,
he's going right after the KBO guy. Jung-hoo
who is Lee. The KBO? Who is Jung-hoo the mysterious?
Lee. That's who I thought it was Lee. That's what I said. I think it's Lee. Jung-hoo Lee.
Okay. We solved that.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like amazing bat. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't have a ton on him. You might, because you drafted him in tout. Giancarlo Stanton finished 103, 191 average, 24 homers, zero steals. A lot of time on the IL.
You correct. Correct. I'm still licking my wound. So we'll move on.
Okay. Ian Happ's a fun one, though, because he finished 25th overall at the position. And we've seen this like progression with Happ. It just depends on what he wants to do each year. He ended up hitting 248, 21 homers, 14 steals, scored 86 runs, drove in 84. Very good season. Amazing OBP skills. Quality contact was really good. A couple years ago, or last year, the year before, 2022, the average went up. The power kind of fell off a bit. This year, the power drop, or the average went down a bit, the power came back up a bit. Just kind of depends on who he is, it feels like, what he wants to do in the lineup, where he's hitting the lineup. But as a whole, I think it's a very good season. It's kind of what you want from him as a potential 2020 type guy, and I think we saw it last year.
And another guy who, I mean, the Cubs, like, it was like Happ, Swanson, Bellinger was playing every day. I mean, Bellinger was hurt a little bit, but the Cubs stick to their guys, and Ian Happ was absolutely 691 plate appearances. Like, a lot of this was volume. It was interesting. You kind of mentioned, Bubba, that Happ has kind of like changed who he is in recent seasons. The gains that he made in strikeout rate, the improvement that he made in strikeout rate in 2022, that completely held in 2023. Yet he lost like 25 points of batting average, going down from 271 to 248. I could even see Ian Happ, given that he held those strikeout rate gains for 2 years now, I could see that go up. And similar to what I was talking about with Kwan at the top, if that goes up, everything else in the skill set kind of just compiles with it. So Ian Happ's just one of those guys, like, not many people talk about. He's not that exciting, but put together a pretty damn productive season, finishing 25th and being drafted 39th.
Yeah, it was a very, very nice season for Ian Happ. So we'll see how the market views him going forward, because he has a fun name. A 150 is not bad, right behind TJ Friedl, who we'll talk about here pretty at the end of the show, actually.
Again, 150. So he only improved four ADP spots after that
not
year.
Not a lot. The outfield is kind of people's hang out with the outfield. That's what I've said. I think it was, I don't know if we were on the air when I mentioned it. We were off air. that it's hard to get those early outfielders because you all your other positions now you kind of get stuck in this part of the draft where they seem to just revolve in this, you know, 150 to 250 range of outfielders. So it's tough to change it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Brandon Nimmo, 40th outfielder on the board, finished 30th overall, hit 274, 24 homers, 3 stolen bases. Power went up, average was the same as last year, didn't score as many runs. Back-to-back seasons of 151 or more games, which was my big bugaboo with him going into this this season. Overall, pretty good, but I think you'd want more out of a leadoff hitter, but that's just me.
Yeah, he's kind of one of those like weird leadoff hitters that doesn't run, kind of like a Schwarber type without the Schwarber power. Great OBP. Like in OBP leagues and points leagues, Nimmo, you get a 363 OBP across 682 plate appearances. Like that is awesome. But from like a roto standpoint, I mean, this is kind of who he is. The if you were expecting or at least just hoping for the stolen base rules to help stolen base total, did not happen. And that's kind of where I definitely agree with you, where like a leadoff hitter getting 682 plate appearances with just 3 steals. Like that's tough. That's tough. Brandon Nimmo with like 10 steals is a lot more impressive to me, attractive to me than what we're seeing here. So I don't really see another step forward for Nimmo from what we saw in 2023. A good year, but I don't know how repeatable.
Yeah, I only see steps back when it comes to Brandon Nimmo. That's what always scares me on draft day. Now here's a big L for me. Cody Bellinger. He finished 7th at the position, 41st off the board. Hit 307, 26 bombs, 20 stolen bases, which is a career high. First, the most home runs he's hit since 47 in 2019. Just an amazing season. Somehow didn't get to 100 and 100. It was 95 and 97 runs in RBIs. Strikeout rate was insane. Great season. And what's crazy is he's only going to be 28 this year, which he's been playing forever. So heck of a season for Bellinger. I'm curious to see where he lands, but great 2023.
Yeah, I mean, similar to what I was saying about Castellanos, it's like this is a track record guy. Maybe just needed that change of scenery. Get out of LA. You have the skills, and like he again entering this season was just 27. Like if you're that young and you've shown the ability to throw together an MVP season, like that's worth drafting in middle rounds where you're starting to get some starting to chase some upside. So will he hit 307 again next year? Like that, I highly doubt. Even like the barrel rate was pretty bad for Cody Bellinger, 6%. That doesn't really support 26 home runs. In the forecaster, we have an expected home run metric. That's all based off StatCast data. Bellinger had those 26 homers, but just 18 expected home runs, which isn't very good at all. So I'm a little wary of paying whatever Bellinger's price is right now. But still, hell of a breakout season that, again, had on hot on labor and helped take me to the promised land there.
Yeah, no, it was a heck of a season. I want to be in on him this year, but there will be a tax. He's up to 55th in the ADP world, so he's getting the ball.
That's going to be tough. Sure. That's close to like your boy Arozarena, isn't it? Well, the reason he's probably like 10.
He's 12 picks after Adelise. He's 3 picks in front of Jazz. He's 5 picks in front of Nolan Jones, 16 in front of Yelich.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's probably like in a 15, that's the 4-5 turn area, give or take. And you're probably getting a lot of pitching there. That's what I'm kind of guessing just off the top of my head. So we'll see how that one pans out. The next guy is very interesting to me, Lars Nootbaar. 42nd outfielder of the board, finished 60th overall. Just the surface numbers, you don't love 261, 14 homers, 11 stolen bases, but I see it in 117 games. Like the skills I like a lot. He was injured throughout the season. The skills are very good with Lars Nootbaar. If he can stay healthy, I think this is another guy that we could see like a Seiya Suzuki type season out of him. So I'm a Lars Nootbaar with maybe more speed than Seiya as well. So I like Lars quite a bit again, but injuries got him overall last year.
Yep, I can definitely see that. And Nootbaar, it's just interesting, like a lot of smart people were really on Nootbaar, and it probably worked out if the injuries didn't get in the way. Like it was good year. Just a, interesting to see him right next to Cody Bellinger, who was almost like a universal fade entering the season. So 92% stolen base success rate for Lars Nootbaar. Like, I think the jump from four steals in 2022 up to 11 last year, I think that could even go higher. Big thing with St. Louis is like, where are they gonna hit him? Is he gonna be back up near the top, like at the expense of Tommy Edman again? What will that look like? How often will he play against? How often did he play against left? Oh, he played pretty regularly against lefties
when he was healthy. And he was the dude.
Yeah, yeah, and had a 320 OBP. Has a career 344 OBP against lefties. A career 353 OBP. So there's really not a platoon issue there either. You're right. It's strictly just stay healthy and compile. I wonder where he's going in 2024.
Because that's why I liked him last year. I didn't like Edman because I didn't think he'd be playing. Nootbaar is 194, three picks in front of Nimmo, and then like 13 picks after Outman.
I mean, I think we just talked about Nimmo. Like, I would take slam Nimmo over Nimmo.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. That wouldn't even be that close to me. There's other guys, you know, Kerry Carpenter, Jaron Duran. I'd probably still take Nootbaar. So, yeah. See how that one plays. I don't have a lot on Harrison Bader. Finished 107, 232, 7, and 20. I traveled around different teams, visited the IL just as much. A rough go.
His favorite team.
Yeah, his favorite team was the IL.
Yeah. No, I don't have much either. It's kind of like the same story. He will be 30 next year. That's kind of crazy to think. I still think of Harrison Bader as like an up-and-coming prospect. And no more. Yeah.
Whit Merrifield, we talked about him earlier. I believe it's second base, 272, 11, and 26. Yeah, finished 36th the position, though.
Yeah, like a fine, honestly. I mean, an unheralded, like, good season for Whit Merrifield. It's not the, you know, first, second round value that he's put up in years past, but to get 272 with 26 bags when not many people that we've talked about have stolen bases, that Whit Merrifield was an awful productive guy who not many folks kind of talked about going 44th at outfield.
Yeah, so that was I can't buy it going back. Let's put it that way.
I mean, he will be 35, like, and these are skills that you don't want to be in your mid-30s to have. I agree.
Mitch Haniger, don't have much to say there. I didn't like the Giants signing him to begin with. He's always hurt. Oh, and he was hurt again. Finished 167 at the position, 209, 6-1. I have nothing on this, and he won't be on any one of my teams.
Yeah, I'll spare you the pain as a Giants fan. We can move on.
Riley Green is a very fun name on the Twitter streets right now. 46th off the board, finished 90th overall, hit 288, 11 home runs, 7 stolen bases in 99 games. He was supposed to be like the stud coming out of spring training. Then he got hurt right before the end of spring training, had to rehab and come back. So he played 99 games. Not bad. Probably still not fully healthy to what we saw in spring training. So I am intrigued by the guy that'll be turning 23 this year.
Tommy John in September on his non-throwing elbow. I will say the hype on Riley Green will only grow once the forecaster comes out. We'll leave it at that. There's an interesting upside projection on Riley Green in the book because the skills look fantastic. It's just he's got to stay healthy. But this combination of skills that he's shown now really over like 2 years, two partial seasons in the big leagues, he's got 834 career plate appearances and the skills are pretty good. And he will just be 23 next season. So I get it. Will I go for it? I don't know. It's going to be tough. But the other thing with Riley Green, I think 2 years in a row, he has shown up on our Homer to Barrel Bloom board as a lagger.
Detroit Tigers.
Could very baby. Well be, exactly. Could be Comerica related, especially in center field. Yep. So take that for what it's worth, that the Homer production might be lagging behind what we see from like a barrel rate or from the skills from Riley Green.
I remember when they announced last year that they're changing like the height of their fences, maybe part of the dimensions, and like right center, and everyone said it was for Riley Green. Well, didn't really pan out, but maybe it will. Again, he's only gonna be 23. He might still be building power.
I know.
That's the crazy thing. So it might actually pay off. And next thing you know, maybe it's 25 bombs next year. Like I would, he's got the skill set. Let's put it that way. And I have not read his forecaster. So I do not even know what the fancy thing is. That's going to get everybody all excited on that one.
It's impressive.
All right. Now the next few guys, I don't have a whole lot on, so I'll let you run with them if you want. Jeff McNeil, anything?
Jesus, I played Jeff McNeil. That's one of those guys you set and forget, and he sucks all year. I had Jeff McNeil, dude, 270, 10, and 10, and played like every day.
Yep.
And got
and 10 he hit in the middle of the order too. Because remember in DFS, he hit like third every game.
And it wasn't even like I'm like perking up, starting to get heated. 270. I think he was even not lucky to get 270, but it was bad for a while. Yeah, he hit 258, McNeil, in the first half and somewhat salvaged it. But the first half for Jeff McNeil, and I remember this because I was looking kind of the all-star break and like evaluating my teams. Jeff McNeil hit 258 with three homers and four steals, like AKA doing absolutely nothing yet. Keep rolling him out there in 15-team leagues because I think he's stable and will provide a good batting average, and it just never happened. So good riddance to Jeff McNeil, who did he get a Ford Bronco? Was that him? Francisco Lindor?
Yeah, I guess they had some kind of bet or something. I didn't read it all. I just saw the picture and the headline, and Lindor made good on his promise. They're supposed to, you know, get a vehicle, and he got a Ford Bronco. And people are clowning on it, but A, they're pretty awesome, these new Ford Broncos.
Yeah, dude, they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. Like, if you get it decked out, which I'm guessing it probably was, that's about $80,000 when all things are said and done. Like, that wasn't a cheap gift.
And it looks good. I like that it's a blue collar. So Lindor made good on his promise that if McNeil won the 2022 batting title,
which I guess he did, because eventually got the freaking car,
he would be the proud owner of a blue Ford Bronco. So I don't know what took so long for Lindor to do this, but
well, I know they were got back Bronco. The Bronco's been back ordered a lot lately, so I don't know. Maybe that was it. But
I like those things. As a former Jeep Wrangler driver, I have a soft spot for those types of.
I have a soft spot for them because as a kid, the old school, like 87 Broncos, where you could take the back shell off of if you wanted to on a nice day. We used to take those down and four-wheeling them and bonfires by the creek. Yes, I live in a small town, so it was a lot of fun. I love those rides. But all right, back to the show.
So if we win Podcast of the Year, FSWA, maybe a loyal, rich listener or something will get Bubba a Jeff McNeil-style Bronco.
That would be amazing. But yeah, let's just start with like, I'll just leave it at that. Oscar Gonzalez.
No. God,
yeah. So he's a 48th outfielder, finished 219, 214, 2-0, and he was in the minors a lot.
Correct.
Joey Meneses is an interesting one, just for the fact that 2022 we saw Joey have a big boy season, hit 13 homers, he hit 20 in 2022, he hit 324 though in 2022, so you kind of expected a big bump. In 2023, 275, 13, 71, 89, no steals. You knew you weren't going to get steals. Overall, not a bad season, I guess, but as a whole, not what you're looking for at all. You can say bad season.
No, it was bad, dude.
I was like, a bad average was nice at that point, but yeah.
The bad thing with it was two homers in the first half. Joey Meneses had more home runs in the World Baseball Classic. He had two homers in one game in the world. I think it was against the U.S.?
I think so, yes. That's what got everybody all excited.
Yeah. Two homers in one game and then two homers in the first half. And so, like, yes, things turned around in the second half. Actually, a pretty decent second half. 40 runs, 50 RBI.
Yeah.
But how much of that was on the team that drafted him? Like, how many teams held on to Joey Meneses in the first half? But that is interesting, the second half, especially the counting stats. And that kind of goes back to like how we perceive the Nationals. We talked about this a little bit in season last year. Like, the lineup wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't.
And second half, you had CJ Abrams going nuts. You had Lane Thomas up there. Like, I can see a path for Joey Meneses if the power kind of holds up, to post kind of some sneaky RBI and run production.
And it's weird. Like, you can't take a full like into this information, but you know, his line drive percentage dropped 5%, his ground ball went up 4%, his infield fly ball went up 9%, and his home run to fly ball in 2022 is 25.5. Last year was 8.6. I know the barrel rate dropped a lot, hard hit rate dropped a lot. It's there's just a massive gaps in what took place in 2022 to 2023 that leave me questioning things. Let's put it that way. So
I think you I don't know if you even split the difference in power between 22 and 23, but he'll be better than a 9% homer to fly ball rate.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I see that drastic of a split in homer, like even if it gets back to like 14 or 15%,
that would be huge. Whatever.
Dude, we're talking back to close to 20 home runs. So if he hits 275, now you're getting RBIs in there and runs scored, and he's formidable. So
you got to think he's cheap. You have to think he's cheap.
I'll let you know. That's Ryan queuing me up here. So Joey, is he not? He's not outfield eligible this year. He's not outfield eligible. He's first base only.
No, he's UT.
UT only, so don't even think about him.
Apologies.
Yeah,
he had 19 first base games.
Ouch, one game. One game is all
one in right field. That's rough. So that's UT a good call.
Yeah, you're not going to draft him at all then, pretty much.
No.
that's a DC only type play.
Oof. If we did care about editing this episode post-production, we got the last minute and a half of Joey Manessa's talk. Bubba shakes his head.
Not happening. Nope. Next up on the agenda here, Alex Verdugo. We'll go from one great. Trust me, it just gets worse. Joey Meneses might be the highlight of the next like 10 names we talk about. Alex Verdugo, 57th outfielder on the season, 58th in ADP, hit 264, 13 homers, 5 stolen bases in 142 games. It's who he is. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly who he is. Each of the last three seasons, Verdugo's had over 600 plate appearances. Each of the last three seasons, Verdugo has 13 homers or less and 6 steals or less. This is who he is, and I don't really see any change going forward.
Jordan Walker. Now, this is a fun name. You know, we talked about it skyrocketing. You know, it was the 51st outfielder off the board. Finished the year as a 69th outfielder. Hit 276, 16 home runs, 7 stolen bases. Much better in the second half. He hit 271. Actually, probably about the same, actually, in the splits if you look at things. But it was just a wonky, you know, minor leagues, backup, minor leagues, like whole weird season for Jordan Walker. But you had a funny thing. I think we talked off the air about Jordan Walker. So what do you have on what do you think about Jordan Walker? Let's put it that way.
Well, no, yeah, because we talked about Walker on the third base episode.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah.
And I kind of mentioned, and actually, so Mike Gianella, I was talking with him a little bit after that show, because Mike was at First Pitch Florida, where Jordan, when I referenced that two homer game that Jordan Walker had, and Mike was saying that that the balls were flying out of the stadium that day. Now, I remember on the third base episode, I was kind of like not heaping the market, but I was like, Jordan Walker had a great spring training, really drove up that ADP, and don't take spring training stats for, you know, really for anything. Turns out Jordan Walker was terrible in spring training. He had that two homer game. He had 3 homers the entire spring training. So he only had one more home run outside of that. He had a 299 OBP in spring training. So goes to show what I perceive that spring training to be, but I don't know. Hey, yeah, we talked about in third base episode. I could easily see this breaking out. This is a top 5 prospect. This is someone who's in his age 22 season coming next year, but we just haven't really seen it at the MLB level. The defense does actually need some work. I know that's a kind of butt joke to send guys back down, but it's kind of true in his case. Yep.
And you have to pay for him, 127 ADP. He's going down a lot of really good outfielders now.
That's early. That's earlier than I thought.
Seth Brown, 222, 14 and 3. He was more of a power speed guy in the past with no average, but the power and speed was not there this year. Injury riddled season, but yeah, not going to happen.
Power and speed guy with no average and with no power and speed.
Yep, so not going to happen. Andrew Benintendi, 53rd outfielder off the board, finished 77th. Everyone was all excited going to a new team with the White Sox. Then we forgot the White Sox. That's who they are. And Andrew Benintendi is who he thought he was. Hit 262 with 5 homers and 13 steals. He's like Verdugo light.
Yeah, he did this over 621 plate appearances. White Sox highest ever, biggest contract that they've ever given a free agent. So that's good.
White Sox doing White Sox things. Ramon Laureano with 54th outfielder finished 124. Like, he started the season like he was suspended for PEDs, and then he came into the season, and then he got traded, and he was hurt a lot. And yeah, it's just, it's a revolving door with Laureano at 224, 9 and 12. The Guardians did pick up his they made an arbitration deal basically with him, so he's coming back to play outfield for him.
I mean, he does have power speed. Like, if I've always, and I think,
yeah, he's a Tommy Pham type guy when healthy.
Yeah, like, I don't think the batting average is ever going to be there. Basically, he hit 288 in Oakland back in 2019, happy fun ball years, never hit over 250 since then. But, like, re-signing, re-upping with the Guardians is probably the best possible. Like, they'll play the guy. I mean, they did at the end of the year. And, like, the names we've talked about, I would take Laureano's homers and steals over the last 10 names that we've talked about. Maybe for sure. Except for Riley Green. So I can see a path taking Laureano. It's just like, I mean, he's hurt all the time or suspended or true, and or both at the same time. That's even possible.
If you have not looked, can you guess his ADP?
I'll say like 320.
511.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that, I'm in.
That's, I'm in too, 100%. Like, he's going around Yastrzemski, Grichuk, after Adele, Trent Grisham. Like, yeah, I'll take my chances with Laureano.
Sure, sure,
100% on that one. Wow, I didn't realize it was that late. That's wild. Here's a fun one though: Lourdes Gurriel Jr., 35th outfielder on the season, was drafted as the 55th outfielder, 261, 24 and 5, came over in the Dalton Varsho deal with Gabriel Moreno. Definitely the D-backs so far have won that deal. Obviously, a lot can change, but Gurriel is a free agent this year, so we'll see where that goes. But he had a great season with the D-backs. The power came back from 2021, which is what we kind of wanted to see. And just the overall production, you know, five stolen bases, second most of his career. The average is kind of who he is for the most part. Maybe could be even better in the past. His BABIP sucked this past year. So I think there's a lot to like there. He's only going to be 30 years old.
Yeah, nice bounce back year for Lourdes, who in 2022, he was kind of the poster boy for playing with a hidden injury. Remember, he had this,
yeah,
I think he had right, like one home run the second half of 2022, then revealed after the season his wrist was messed up and he had surgery on it in October. And sure enough, power snapped right back to what we were used to seeing from Lourdes Gurriel in Toronto. So yes, watch the landing spot, but I also agree with you, Bubba, on the batting average. The track record there is a lot better than what we saw, and the BABIP track record is a lot better than what we saw in 2023. So I could actually see Lourdes Gurriel repeating the home run total, but also doing it with another 20 points of batting average, which would be pretty sweet at a stage where outfield looks to be just falling off a cliff.
I think I could foresee the D-backs bringing him back. Like, he was a favorite in that place with his purple hair and everything on that run.
You could see the purple hair from your
from my seats.
From your seats.
Yep, it was very clear. So I could see them bringing him back. That was kind of a good fit with that whole situation there. It helps when you go to the World Series and all, but it was a good fit.
Yeah.
Estuary Ruiz finished 31st in the position. Thanks for 67 stolen bases, 254 average. Five homers might be more than most people would have thought was coming from Estuary, to be honest. We knew he's a speed demon. The conversation was, could he get on base to do it? He did. He did pretty darn good, all things considered. You'd hope for a better than 309 OBP from a speed guy like this, but I think this is almost, you don't want to say you could pencil this in, but with the steals environment that we have, I think personally this is who he is, but I don't know if I want to draft that. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, like, there's a major divide here between, I think, what the valuation spits out for 67 stolen bases and what actually is practical on your team. And so, like, what I mean by that is I had Estuary Ruiz in actually the too early draft that we did this year, where I had drafted Ronald Acuna, like, fifth overall. I had drafted Ruiz late in the 20s. By midseason, I was ahead in steals by, like,
so much.
I think 30 bags, to where Estuary Ruiz had no value to me at all. And this was the case on teams that had Ruiz as well, and especially in leagues where you can't trade or you even can't do like fab moves. Like, and this is like, so on a lot of teams, yes, Asiri Ruiz had 67. I wonder how many of those 67 bags were actually useful to the teams that Ruiz was on. Like, because for my team, I'm just saying finishing first in steals, like Ruiz could have stole 20 bases. It would not have mattered. And so that's just like, I don't know, that's just an example. And no one really cares about my team, but I think that's a good example of like how with these kind of extreme outlier category guys, I mean, this is Billy Hamilton, like, A, you're screwed if it doesn't hit because you build your team around Ruiz getting 60 bags or whatever. But there's also risk that you can overshoot a category by a lot. And so any excess, basically any excess that you get in a category that you finish first doesn't matter. And no. So like, I bet for a lot of teams that had Asiri Ruiz, like anything over 30 steals, you may not have even needed it. So I don't know. There were weeks where I just wasn't even playing him because I didn't need steals and he doesn't do anything else.
Especially when he had less than 50 runs and 50 RBIs. Like he's doing nothing else for you. Like he's just a literal glutton in your lineup because it's the same thing. Like you mentioned, like McNeil and other guys in the past, people are probably still starting them too. That's the thing. It's because it's like, I want all the steals, but you really didn't need all the steals, like you're saying. So I think in a trades league, he's probably fun. You could probably draft him early, rack up your steals, trade them off for somebody, like get a power bat or two or a pitcher or something. But an NPC is tough. Very, very tough.
Yep. So I was saying frequently, I wish I could trade Asiri Ruiz in a draft and hold, which against the rules.
Yeah, it's definitely against the rules. Michael Conforto was the 57th outfielder off the board, finished 81st, 239, 15 and 4, played in 125 games, was hurt off and on. If you've heard that before, shocker. Yep. Yep. It just sucks because when he was healthy, like you could tell when he came off the aisle healthy, at least healthy ish, he played well for like a week or two, then he get hurt again. So that's where we're at.
Agreed.
Brian De La Cruz. Now, this is interesting because he finished 2022 like on a heater. And then there's discussion, was would he make the team? You know, they were talking about Jesus Sanchez and other guys. De La Cruz was the 51st outfielder overall, according to the Razzball Player Rater. 259 average, 19 homers, 4 stolen bases. The average was pretty solid. The power went up 6 home runs, but he did play in almost 40 more games than the previous season. It was a mixed bag for De La Cruz, just from experience with DFS-wise. The first half, he crushed it. Second half, not so much.
Not so much, but still, like, the skills were there in the second half. I'm just looking at his forecaster box as we kind of talk, and there's an impressive upside on Brian De La Cruz. I could even see a world where he's the most valuable De La Cruz in 2024.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
I could see that being a bold prediction on certain sites, you know, when everyone does their bold predictions. It's kind of a combination sliding Ellie De La Cruz and the downside, what we saw in the second half, but also the like the pretty interesting power numbers and like not bad strikeout rate and 4 out of 5 stolen bases for De La Cruz. Like, I think there's some pieces here. If Miami plays him every day, that can make this work. I like De La Cruz quite a bit. I don't know, you know, the surface stats weren't all that with 19 homers and 259 batting average, but I think there's some room for growth there.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm a fan of De La Cruz. Just do it for a full season, I'd be really pumped. That's what I want to see. Make it consistent. Yep. Masataka Yoshida, 59th outfielder off the board, finished 37th at the position. 289 average, 15 homers, 8 steals in 140 games. This was a tough one because he showed signs of being so darn good at times, and then other times he disappeared with a ground ball rate close to 55%. And it's just, who are we going to get? Because the bat-to-ball skills are pretty solid overall. Just the consistent output is rough. So what are your thoughts on Yoshida, who I think this could be, you know, first year in the bigs in America, like, let's get comfortable thing with him too. Who knows?
Yeah, so there's definitely that. There's that, you know, these are humans. They're not just stats on a screen. That could very well much be it. I had Yoshida's forecaster box. There were some pretty stark first and second half splits for Yoshida where pitchers were adjusting to him pretty well. So the batting average from first half to second half for Yoshida dropped from 305 to 271. The walk rate went from 9% down to 3%. And the contact rate went from 87, which is really good, down to 82 in the second half, which is still just, it's above average, but it's not really good. So I think Yoshida is going to have to adjust back to the adjustment in year two, because those second half plate skills are pretty worrisome when you pretty much don't bring anything else to the table. There's some risk that this is a Alex Verdugo type of profile.
Yeah. I was about to say, we said Ben Denny's Alex Verdugo light. Yoshida's Alex Verdugo plus a little was the way I look at it. That's very similar. And hey, two play for the Red Sox, one used to play for the Red Sox. Maybe they have a type in that front office. So
Alex Verdugo heavy.
Heavy, yes. He's the original, the Coors original. then there's the light and there's the ice. So that's what we got going for us.
I went to college too.
I drink ice.
You only drink those beers if you went to college. That's right.
Yep. I can tell you. I gave you a whole rundown, a pyramid of that one, Ben Tidd.
So Alex Verdugo ice.
Yep. Oh. Yeah. So yeah, the black.
I can just see myself at a beer pong table right now.
Yep. Pretty much. 2:30 in the morning. Should have been in bed about 4 hours ago. Yeah. And then the last one here, Jock Peterson finished 95th at the position, 235, 15-0. Hurt a lot in the season, so I got nothing.
The third San Francisco Giant where we've just talked about injuries. In the outfield this episode. Yep. So that's got to be good for it.
We didn't even get to Yastrzemski. He was always hurt too. It was a trend, folks. A very heavy trend with the Giants last year.
Yeah, great.
Lovely. All right, let's talk about some of the guys that exceeded expectations. We'll start with Lane Thomas, ADP of 283. Jock Peterson was 255 for a reference point. So Lane Thomas went about almost 30 picks later, 28 picks later. Lane Thomas finished 10th at the position. So now we're getting somewhere. Hitting 268 with 28 home runs, 20 stolen bases, scored 101, drove in 86. Former St. Louis Cardinal, Lane Thomas. This was big boy stuff. He had a heck of a season. After kind of showcasing it a bit in 2022, he unleashed in 2023 in his age 27 season.
Yeah, and a lot supported by the skills. Like our HQ's expected home runs, expected stolen bases are pretty much right in line with what we saw, the surface stats. Volume just exploded with the 682 plate appearances. Lane Thomas was on a bloom board entering the season. We talked about this at First Pitch last year, and I'm sure I'll run it again this year. But Lane Thomas in stolen base attempts was the biggest gainer from first half to second half in 2022. And that portended to bigger things with the rule changes this season, with the stolen bases going up from 8 to 20 in 2023. So great, great year from Lane Thomas. I do worry you are buying in 2024 off of a career year. So I do think there's some pullback, but that's just kind of normal regression. But yeah, great year. And if he continue, I mean, we talked about the Nationals lineup already. See, we should not delete the Joey Meneses commentary.
Telling you.
It ties into Lane Thomas. That lineup is
all professional podcasting, Bloomfield, so we don't delete things.
Yeah, you've been around the block a few times, so I trust you.
Lane Thomas, ADP is 110, which is fair. You know, it's
not bad.
It's 10 picks after Spencer Steer, 8 picks in front of Seiya Suzuki, 20 picks after like Brian Reynolds, Schwarber, those kind of guys. So it's not bad. It's very I got him actually at pick 121 in our early meatball draft. So I'll take that all day long. So yeah, not too shabby there. We're gonna skip Marcelo Zuna because he's not outfield relevant, but he did finish 12th the position in 2023. And we'll go to Josh Lowe. This is a big one. ADP of 425. Remember, Lane Thomas was 283. ADP of 425, finished 16th at the position in his age 25 season. He hit 292, 20 homers, 32 stolen bases. This is kind of what everybody was hoping they'd see from Josh Lowe eventually. Played 135 games. Very, very impressive stuff. And he eventually just started playing every day. The Rays just let him go, which was great to see towards the end.
Yeah, and I didn't really realize Josh Lowe. I thought he had a second half slide, and
no,
kind of, but like he hit 300 in the second half. Yeah, and maybe that's where I'm like,
I think I'm just top of my head. I think his post All-Star break was a little sluggish, and he was platooning a lot still. Then they just let him go, and it was good again.
Yep. the key will be like, yeah, with the playing time, will the Rays, I mean, you mentioned he played a little bit more against lefties at the end, I guess, but still only had 67 plate appearances all year against left-handed pitching. So I don't know if Josh Lowe is out of the woods from a platoon standpoint. I mean, he's got a career 239 on base percentage against lefties. That is awful. Even last year, it was 284. Not great. So still think there's some playing time downside there, but I think the production against right-handers that is pretty much skill supported is probably worth it anyway.
You got to pay of an ADP of 79 now. So,
oh yeah.
Pay the piper. Yeah. Tough one there. You get potential platoon. Probably shouldn't. He shouldn't, but it's the Rays. Or you can wait like 30 picks, 40 picks, and go get Lane Thomas. Like, those are the kind of discussions to be had.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I did mention the awful OBP in his career. That career, quote unquote, is 113 plate appearances. Yeah, like, he has not been given the chance to really show what he can do against lefties if there is something there.
For sure. TJ Friedl, this is a phone. I had a lot of shares of TJ Friedl this past season. Finished 24th in the outfield with an ADP of 358. 279 average, 18 home runs, 27 stolen bases. Great season. But as we talked about in First Pitch Arizona, Ryan, the ballpark was beautiful for TJ Friedl.
Absolutely.
Which he'll be playing in next year, so he can't really use that as an excuse. He'll be leading off next year, most likely.
The bit of cold water that I will pour on TJ Friedl, the Statcast numbers are terrible. The exit velocity is terrible. The barrel rate, 3%, is terrible. Like, I don't think he can. I don't know. Yes, the ballpark. Yes, like, he's compiling. I don't think this guy can hit 18 homers again.
Yep.
I think you're looking more like a 10 to 12 home run type guy with a good batting average, and he runs. So, like, the rest of the profile is pretty solid, but I wouldn't pay for a repeat.
Yeah, it's tricky, and ADP is around 150, so it kind of depends on how your team build looks, is the way I'll say that. Like, I won't cross them off, but it's got to fit for the needs at that point in the draft. Yeah. Jorge Soler, 27th outfielder overall at the end of the season, ADP of 283, hit 35 home runs while hitting 250, or 36 home runs while hitting 250. Looking for a home right now, but looks like all things are pointing back to Miami. Any thoughts on Soler, kind of who we thought he was? If he can hit 250 every time, I'm if you need power late, I'm a fan.
Yeah, like, we knew the power would be there over a full season of at-bats. Yeah, the 250. I don't know if he gets there again. He did improve the strikeout rate in 2023, so there is that. But, like, this is a guy the previous three seasons at 07, 223, 228. So, like, the 250 is the number that I'm like, I don't know. This could be a 220 with 30 home runs, but that isn't as enticing.
Yep. And the last guy I want to mention here, because he's a fun name right now, James Outman, finished 28th at the position, ADP of 471. Finished the year hitting 248 with 23 homers and 16 steals. It was a roller coaster of a year. Started out great. At one point, looked like he was going to go back to the minors for a bit. And then he finished the year strong. If you look at his first half, second half, 236 average, 264 in the second half. Home runs are about the same. Steals are about the same, but the batting average improved significantly in the second half. It did, you know, September and October were not kind of him. That's why it's a weird season, but for a rookie, kind of what I'd expect, honestly, as pitchers start to figure him out. The fact he finished the year as strong as, like, overall as strong as he did, good signs to the upcoming season. So what's your thoughts on Outman?
Yeah, like, really good power speed combo, better than I thought, for sure, and was plenty productive on the bases, 84% success rate. If you're above the mid 70s, it behooves teams to have you run more. That's kind of the break even point. So anything in the 80s, like Outman had last year, is a sign that the light will stay green. I worry a lot about the strikeout rate. Like, I don't know, similar to Soler, I don't think 248 even is attainable, but you're right, Bubba. Like, this was his rookie year, so we could see some growth, but he's an old rookie. He'll be 27 next year. Yep. Which also I think probably counts against him. Just the minor league track record was, you know, this isn't like a top prospect who is 22.
That is very, very true. So we'll have to see how that pans out. ADP of around 180. So you're not having to pay a fortune for him, which is, yep, which is nice, but yeah, we'll see. All right. Before we get into listener questions, any final thoughts as we finish up our top 1 through 60 or part 1 and 2 of the outfield, where it was not pretty in the second half, like we said.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, and again, I haven't, I have done the one draft. I will admit, I try to admit that I haven't drafted yet, but if anything, it's outfield, I think, should be a target early, because a lot of these guys just did not produce and are probably thus staying in the same part of the draft. So I think that, I don't know. I mean, you're the one who's been drafting a little bit more. Like, have you noticed outfield starting like round 10 starts to die?
Kind of, but it's like I said, I think earlier, is they're all going around this time still because you're taking other positions. Like, you have to fill your other spots up. You can't, not everyone's going to 5 outfielders early. So it's, it kind of has to be a strategy. If you're comfortable with other positions later, go get your outfield would be my suggestion, but it's hard because you want to get good pitching. You want to get a closer, especially in these early drafts, they're drafting holds. So pitching, like, closers go up some more, kind of, and it just leaves kind of a gap of things. And, you know, we even said on some of these guys, everyone's going to still be optimistic. You know, you mentioned like Brian De La Cruz, Lourdes Gurriel, maybe Ramon Laureano. Like, there's a handful of guys you're thinking, Riley Green, I can wait on these guys is the idea. And, and then when you don't get them, now you're stuck with someone else.
Alex Verdugo. and his ice and light counterpart.
His ice and light, yes. So you can do them all. Have some fun with that. All right. Let's take our one listener question, which I think is like a multiple parter. Like I mentioned Ben Tidd's comment earlier, which was very, very true about the speed. Thomas Trovato comes at us with a couple questions. Who are the outfielders who finished 30 through 60 in 2023 that we should push up to expect a 1 through 30 performance in 2024?
So I think, I mean, Cody Bellinger is the obvious answer. That's the easy one. I will throw Seiya Suzuki.
That'd be the next guy for sure.
I think I'd be most confident, even more so than like Castellanos. I think if Seiya Suzuki stays healthy, what we saw from him in the second half, from a healthy version of him, that would be my choice. Wouldn't be surprised at all if it's Riley Green. Like if that starts to just click, that could happen at any time, despite the injuries. I don't know.
Lars Nootbaar would be the other guy. Lars Nootbaar would be the other guy.
If he's Nootbaar, healthy, yeah.
Leading off.
Yep. I could definitely see that too. Yep.
Yeah. A 2015 guy scores close to 100 runs leading off. Like, I could see that. That could be a thing. But yeah, it's Green and Seiya. They'll be the top two probably. But yeah, it's a little rough elsewhere. Yeah, Lord, it's like you're going to say, I think he almost was top 30 anyways. So that could be. I mean, what about Jordan Walker? Like, taking the Jordan Walker jump?
Yeah. Just because you're, I mean, we're leaning heavily on the prospect pedigree there, but could see it.
All right. His other part of his question, who will have a better 2024, Yoshida or Suzuki? And why do most people think it's Suzuki? He had a hot month against inferior opponents down the stretch. Well, we will think it's Suzuki.
Yeah, guilty. For the reasons we've laid out. Yeah, I guess my comp from of Yoshida to Verdugo would cement that in. So I'm definitely Suzuki. Like, I think it's, honestly, I don't think it's that close
between the two. I'm with you. I think it's Team Suzuki for me as well. All right, Ryan. Well, that'll do it. Wrapping up another set of Bloom boards for position players are done offensively. Now we have pitchers to go. Now we have pitchers to go because we're not doing a utility episode. Sorry, folks. We got two starting pitching episodes next week, the relievers, and reviews are done. So final thoughts, I guess you want to do an overall hitters thing you can, or anything else you got before we head off to Thanksgiving?
No, I think these have been very helpful for me definitely on the hitter side. We'll see what the hit rate is or was for starting pitchers early in the drafts. You've kind of been alluding to that because basically every position, that top five or six, has been really good and returned a fair chunk of draft value back in 2023. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the starting pitchers. I guess. And we'll probably do a live gladiator at some point in December once we're done with these previews, and I don't know, a couple other fun things before we hit the new year and start doing previews.
Yep. Again. Previews will be here before you know it. Plus, like Ryan said, we'll do some live drafting and some other fun stuff. Is Bloomboard season starts up again here pretty soon.
Yeah, so we'll I'll start those in January. Yeah. We'll stay twice a week. So we'll have plenty of stuff. I don't know. Enjoy your forecasters. Enjoy your Thanksgivings.
Yep.
Those go hand in hand. That should be a tradition.
Yep. So. Salute a high noon to you guys on Thursday, because I will be. So enjoy. But until next time, next Tuesday, a week from today, we'll be back with you guys. You can get Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BDentric. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 85. Catch y'all next time.